Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Rarity is Fundamental podcast, episode 32. Was it really a hiatus if no one knew about it? No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. What's up, Internet? This is the Rarity is Fundamental podcast, episode 32, recorded on October the 6th, 2015, brought to you by the Happy Hour Network and RayRay.net. I am your sexy party host, Ray Moraldi, a.k.a. RayRay. I know it's been a while since we had a podcast, but I just took time off for personal reasons, but we're back on regular rotation now. Now, if you've never heard this podcast, or me, well, I'm mostly known as an NBA online writer. You can catch my stuff at thenolookpass.com. You can expect some NBA talk here, but that's not all you're going to hear here. I will talk about other sports like football, baseball, maybe even hockey. I will talk about wrestling. I will talk about pop music. I will talk about teen dramas. I will talk about dating. I will talk about whatever I want because, after all, we're here to talk about the fundamentals of life. I will talk to mostly sports personalities about basically anything and everything. I also have a couple of regular sections on this podcast. I talk about anything old school with my friend EJ Christian, anything from the 80s, 90s, 2000s, I guess 2000s is old school now, right? And I have some girl talk with my strong woman friends called the Gal Pal Squad, where I get a woman's perspective about certain subjects. I'm not going to delay this any further. Our guest for this podcast is Jackie Mesa Pepper, who has her own podcast called Pepper on Sports, and she sometimes appears on Going Rogan and Fred Rogan on KNBC LA. Let's get into it. Scratch! Ray Ray is Fundamental, episode 32, recorded October the 6th, 2015. I am Ray Ray with my co-host, Adam Jacoby. What's up?
How are you doing, Ray Ray? Is it as lovely an afternoon there as it is here? Because it's a lovely afternoon here.
It is very lovely here in Southern California. And also, our guest on the line is also from Southern California. She does a Pepper on Sports podcast. She appears on NBC LA sometimes. Jackie Mesa Pepper, how's it going?
Hey, what's going on? Adam, where are you, by the way?
I am in picturesque Iowa City, Iowa.
No kidding. Wow.
That's right.
Pretty, I don't know what adjective to use.
Normally, 90% of the time, whenever a Californian hears that I'm in Iowa, their response is, I didn't know they had the internet there.
And so you guys just got it last year. It's been a life changer.
it really has. We're looking forward to plumbing, indoor plumbing. we've got a 2040 estimated arrival date on that. So
amazing. At least you have water, unlike Ray and I here in California.
Yeah, you use up all the water. How do you do that?
Oh, plenty of ways, let me tell you.
So I have a question for Adam, because since he only got the internet last year, I've known him for like 5-6 years now. Mm-hmm. So how did you use the internet?
Carrier pigeons. It's
okay.
I send the tweets via the thing that tweets, and then it delivers it to Chicago, which was our nearest internet outpost.
That's a lot of pigeons because you have a lot of tweets.
Yeah. Well, Iowa's a weird place, man.
You should have borrowed the owls from Harry Potter and the ravens from Game of Thrones. I'm pretty sure they're faster than pigeons.
Well, I mean, we just had, you know, what we had. That's all we used.
Make do with what you got. Mm-hmm. Respectable, totally.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Hogwarts is in England. I don't know if you knew that. That's a long way away.
I've read all the Harry Potter books. Duh. Come on.
Jeez. We're off to a good start. Yeah, so lots of things going on in the sports world. I've been kind of away from it for the past weekend, but from what I've gathered, the baseball playoffs are starting today. Mm-hmm. And Adam's Cubs are actually in it.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing tomorrow. But what I really want to ask is that, like, I had no idea that the format for the MLB playoffs changed last year, and I'm not really for it. Like, what do you guys think of the format right now?
Adam, I defer to you.
Okay. Well, up until about 2012, the Cubs would not be in the playoffs right now. No. I mean, they're third in their division. And so back when it was only one wild card, they'd be missing out. They'd be 97-65 and sitting at home. So that'd be a real bummer. And so I'm glad that that's not the case. I know that not everybody agrees that this is the best way to do it. And I get it. And I get that, you know, there's some reason to think that like a 3-game wild card series might be more entertaining and less of a, you know, a coin flip.
Which is what I suggested actually to Jackie off the air.
Look at Mr. Hijack the credit for the this and that. Thanks, man.
Totally.
Okay.
Totally.
Keep going.
But like I get it, because if you don't want two of the 10 teams, 20% of the teams in the playoffs to just play one game and then that's it, go home. They're selling T-shirts that say this is our October, and you don't want to buy that and then be like, our October lasted 3 hours, you know. So I mean, I get why people sort of want to do the 3-game thing. At the same time, it's more of a logistical struggle, and you know, there's a whole lot to work out, and it takes, you know, 3 days to do it rather than one. So if you're not in a wild card game, I think you'd get sort of bored waiting for the other wild card teams to do what they do. So, you know, there's a lot of balancing that needs to be done, and I don't know what the right balance is. If I were going to change anything, I'm sorry, Jackie, the one thing that I would change is instead of only division winners getting the bye and only wild card teams having to play in the wild card game, why not give the three best records that first bye and then make the worst two records, regardless of whether they're the wild card or not? Why not make them play the play-in game? And am I saying that because it would benefit the Cubs? Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying. Those are my thoughts. Okay, Jackie, I'm sorry.
No. You make a lot of great points there. Here's my set of pros for the way the format is now. What Adam already said. His team is in it. They wouldn't have been before. So that's a plus just right off the bat. Number two, to me, this becomes more like the NFL or like college basketball's March Madness with a do or die. You know, it's one game to give it all you got. And like Ray said to me off air, what if it's just a bad day? I mean, is that really fair to hinge everything on one game when the rest of the World Series playoffs is made up of that series? So, you know, that's a little bit of an issue, but it makes for great excitement. But here's what I think really needs to happen. And the NBA did this in the offseason. They have changed the playoff format. It's no longer necessarily about division winners, which it is in baseball. Your Cubbies have a record of 97-65. My Dodgers, who won their division, unlike the Cubs who are third in their division, have a record of 92-70. How is that fair? You know, the top three teams in the Cubs division have a better record than the division leading Dodgers out in the West, yet they have a secured playoff spot. And I just think we're past that. I mean, who cares about divisions at this point? Shouldn't the best teams be in the playoffs? And I think that's where the conversation will end up going in the future, because theoretically the Cubs could have been out of the playoffs and they have a significantly better record than the Dodgers. And that's just not right.
I hijacked Adam, and now Jackie just hijacked what I was about to say. So,
oops. What goes around comes around, Ray.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's all good. But yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm all for three game wild card series. The thing is, like my friend suggested, that they're only doing a one game wild card plays because so they can strategize which pitcher to use in that one game, so that the next series, you know. They don't know. They may not be able to use the best pitcher in the next game. It'll give the other team the advantage. So that's what my friend is suggesting. It's because of strategic purposes also for just one game. But I don't know. I think I'd rather have a longer playoff series. And as Jackie said, I'd rather just do it with the divisions altogether, because we're really past that. Like, oh, yay, you won the NL East. Hooray. You know, I don't know. I'm just kind of past that as well. So what do you think?
Well, I think that the utility of dividing by divisions and then, you know, assigning more weight to winning your division, I think that sort of is obsolete when you realize that, one, you know, you play outside of your division a whole lot more than
you play everybody anyway.
Right. Yeah. There are interleague games now.
Right.
So
that wasn't a thing in the 90s either, right? They didn't play the other league until like 1995 or whatever,
which is
right?
insane to think about, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I wouldn't do without it now, but yeah, but you know, for years it was just like, well, that's not a thing we're going to do. But mm-hmm. you know, and then, but in that scenario, yeah, it sort of makes sense to, first divvy up by division, divide by division. Yeah. but you know, but now it doesn't make as much sense. And the NBA is the same way. You know, there's so much mixing of schedules and conferences and divisions that why, you know, it really doesn't matter if you win your division with a significantly worse record than, you know, the team that comes in second but is still like seven games ahead of you in some other division. Like that mm-hmm. it's no longer an accomplishment, and it really doesn't need to be rewarded like that. So, yeah, the NBA is on the right track, and hopefully baseball makes the same smart move when the time comes.
Should football do the same too?
Maybe. You play your division teams twice, and then your division also sort of shares you know, scheduling with you know, this division and that division. So like you've seen a lot of the NFC South playing the NFC East right now. And then when it comes to the interleague games, you know, it's not as if one team in let's say the NFC East has to deal with the Patriots and the Steelers and I think the Steelers are good this year, but like all the really good teams from the AFC East, but then the Eagles get all the lousy teams. No, I mean, like, the schedules are you know, pretty closely coordinated. So I get why the NFL doesn't have that same impetus yet. You know, you could even sort of take the tack that, well, it's sort of fun to see a 7-9 team in the NFL playoffs, you know, which
and win
and win. I mean,
sucks
that's
to
okay,
be
that's
that 9-7 team though that doesn't make the playoffs, right?
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I see reason for debate on both sides there, and I don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm. Jackie, last thoughts.
I got nothing.
Okay. Awesome.
We'll be right back with more Jackie Pepper after this break and after this song.
This is Lana Berry from The Lana Berry Show with Lana Berry, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, and Adam Jacoby is a terrible person. All I want to do is have a little fun before I die. There's a man next to me out of nowhere. Apropos of nothing, he says his name is William. I'm sure he's Bill, or Billy, or Mac, or Buddy. And he's played ugly to me.
Transitioning to football right now, the Patriots, the Bengals, the Broncos, the Packers,
Panthers,
and the Falcons all undefeated so far. So, any surprises in the NFL so far? How are you, Jackie?
Well, to me, with a few exceptions, you know, I think when you look at a team like the Bengals or even the Cardinals being 3-1. Yes, the winners are a bit of a surprise. But to me, the real surprises in the NFL thus far are the losers. I mean, look at the Saints. They're 1-3. The Lions are 0-4. And
well, they're losers.
Yeah, well, I know, but you know, when you have a guy like Matt Stafford and Calvin Johnson, I know what happened last night, obviously. Homeboy got burned twice by the refs in the last few years in the end zone, which totally
right.
sucks. And then you have Seattle coming off their second trip to the Super Bowl. They're 2-2, but they really should be 1-3. So to me, and that's in reference to last night getting a huge call from the refs that was clearly a mistake, which was shown in replays, not even just hindsight, but in replays, it was shown that the refs made a horrible call there. So to me, the losers are actually a bit more surprising than the slew of winners. Remember when, I think it was in 2008, the 2008-2009 season, I believe the Broncos started out 6-0. This is when Josh McDaniels was the head coach and Jay Cutler was the quarterback, and everybody was like all up on the Broncos bandwagon. And then I think they lost almost every other game that season after that. So I'm not going to get too excited about a 4-0 team in the NFL yet. This is a pretty standard thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like I remember, like the Raiders in the mid-90s, when they first went to Oakland, they were 8-2, and they were on cloud nine basically. Then they lost the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So went 8-8. Adam.
Yeah, I think the one of the cool things about all the undefeated teams is that unlike in years past where it's been like, whoa, this team is 3-0, I guess we should start writing about them as though they're legit, even though they're. You know, there's a reason why we didn't think they were going to be one of the top half of the teams in the NFL this year. You don't really see a whole lot of that. I mean, I guess the closest you're going to come to somewhat to seeing a team and you just look at them like, oh, they're going to fold. It's like the Bengals. But like Atlanta has looked really, really good. Devontae Freeman is just a monster in the backfield. And as long as Jones and White stay healthy at wideout, for the Falcons. I mean, that team's going to be putting up 30 points on basically everybody this year. So so it's been fun to watch the good teams play really, really well and get rewarded with wins and not, you know, just be sucked into the sort of 50-50 slog that NFL games sort of feel like sometimes. So, yeah, I mean, the more that I can watch really good, really well executed football and see it rewarded with wins, the better. And then, you know, and on that same token, Aaron Rodgers is playing just lights out football and it's really fun. And I hope he stays healthy and the rest of his receivers, Jordy Nelson notwithstanding, I hope that they, you know, stay upright for him and that this version of the Packers pretty closely resembles someone that we'll get after 16 weeks of football and into the playoffs, because that's, you know, the attrition sort of has sucked the fun out of football over the last couple postseasons.
Absolutely.
And so I'm just sort of keeping my fingers crossed that we don't have to deal with that this year, and hopefully all the teams that are fun after 4 weeks are still going to be fun into January.
I would really love to see a Packers-Patriots Super Bowl. I mean, even though I'm kind of sick of the Patriots for, you know, all kinds of reasons, it is unbelievable that in 15 years, it's like no matter who they plug into their system, it's a win. You know, you lose a guy like Randy Moss, right? And you're like, oh man, how do you replace Randy Moss? You replace him with like Danny Woodhead and Julian Edelman. What?
And it works.
It's just crazy. And Tom Brady coming off of all the Deflategate stuff to come out and have the start that he's had is a great story. Even if you hate them, I mean, that's part of the lore of a team like the Patriots. It's like the Yankees. You can love them and hate them. Either way, it's all good. So I would love to see those two teams maybe end up kind of at the end of the road in San Francisco. But also, to me, the Panthers are, again, it's really early, so I don't want to get my hopes up. But since Cam Newton's rookie year, it's like, what have you done for me lately? And Ron Rivera, this is I don't know, I feel like this could be a do or die situation for him. And you see that the Panthers are 4-0, and they've been missing their stud linebacker, Luke Kuechly. He went down in week one with a concussion and hasn't played since. And they've still been able to maintain. I mean, the Panthers defense was my second highest scoring fantasy person on my team this week. I was like, I have to play the Panthers because they're taking on the Jameis Winston-led Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I just knew that would be great for me, and it was. Mm-hmm. So
and it was.
Yeah, so I am curious to see if they can end up being the real deal and if this will be a career-defining year for Cam Newton, because with him, after that first year, it's been much ado about nothing.
Yeah, I hope it is. Because
I'm just sad. Go Niners and stuff.
Oh. Sorry, buddy.
You know, this
ain't your year.
Bringing up the NFL, though. That's
it's also not my fault that everyone else retired from that team, and they're only scoring like 12 points per game. Like, that's just terrible. And Caps just everything's just horrible. Okay, I was up in the Bay Area last weekend, right? And we're all Niners fans, me and my family. And the game was on, and like one person was watching because we all knew the Niners sucked. That's how bad it
Ooh,
is right
fair
now.
Fair weather fans right there.
I know. Well, it was also a family reunion, so there's that
oh,
also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but still, like, usually we'll be crowded around the TV, but only one person was watching, and I was kind of glancing at it, so yeah, it was just terrible.
Well, as you can understand, Ray, for sure, you know, trying to watch the Lakers last year, like, in the last 30 games was almost impossible. I mean, I tried, man. I tried to be a good soldier and hang tough and watch those games on Time Warner, Sportsnet, whatever. And it's just, it was depressing. You know, like, why do you want to put yourself through that? I mean, it's very, I don't know, I'm a bit of a hypocrite because when you were telling the story about your family not watching the Niners, I'm thinking, wow, real good fan base there. But then I reminded myself of being unable to physically stomach watching the Lakers last.
It's tough. Isn't it the same thing with you, Adam, with the Cubs?
Well, for years, I just didn't go out of my way to watch any of the games. One, because they've got sort of a weird television setup in the state of Iowa. And two,
have the bunny ear antennas, the whole thing.
Oh, my goodness.
No, that is not what I mean at all. How dare you? No, we're in a blackout zone for six Major League Baseball teams in the state of Iowa.
What?
So,
wow.
Oh, yeah. Six teams claim us as their local area, which means that about 30% of the games on ESPN or MLB Network are blacked out.
That's insane.
Yeah, but
right.
But is it available to you to have all six of those regional cable providers that have the rights to those teams' games?
Well, there are two channels that have rights. There's Comcast Chicago and WGN.
Okay.
We get the Comcast Sports Network. We don't get WGN. So there have been about...
What teams are these? I'm so confused. Other than
WGN Chicago. I know that.
Yeah, no, but I mean, other than the White Sox and the Cubs, what are the other teams that they're claiming as local for you?
The Twins, the Royals, the Cardinals, and the Brewers. Like, we don't get Fox Sports Milwaukee here.
No, you
don't. Oh, no. But they're still allowed to claim us anyway.
Wow, that's sucks.
And so they do. Yeah, no, it's awful. And so, about half the games would ever be on TV. And if there were other games that, might be on, they just wouldn't be available if they were on WGN. Even if they were also on ESPN. So that was one hurdle to get over. But, you know, at the same time, they were losing two-thirds of them. And so why put myself through that for 3 hours?
No,
but this year has been exciting and incredible and wonderful. And it's a bunch of kids that I got to watch, like, play at AAA Iowa Cubs. You know, there's seven rookies on the team right now. So, and they all came up through the farm system. So,
that's great.
Yeah. So that's been sort of my first foray into being able to actually throw myself into a Cubs season since 2007 or 2008.
Well, you
but
picked
yeah,
the right
I mean,
time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but, you know, seeing what you guys are going through with the Lakers and the Niners. It's awfully similar to what my brother, who's an Iowa State alumnus, and they've got just a horrific football program right now. And so he doesn't, and so he is just totally checked out on them. And the thought process is, look, if they're not going to try really hard, if they're not going to care about the sport, why should I care on their behalf? You know? And it feels like with the Niners, like, why would you care about this team right now? The Niners don't care about the Niners. No. Why would you?
Yeah.
And when the Lakers were in full tank last year, I mean, that it was it was the exact opposite of appointment viewing. Schedule your day around not watching the Lakers.
I'm going to be working tonight from 7 to 9, just so you know.
Right.
Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So, Jackie mentioned fantasy sports. And I've avoided fantasy sports for the last decade because I've had a former friend who cared more about his fantasy team than his real-life NFL team, which is the Niners. So I don't even consider him a Niners fan anymore because he's more of a fan of his fantasy team. Like, I couldn't even watch the Colts and the Pats, who were both undefeated at the time, because he would kept yelling, Randy Moss is on my fantasy team. Like, he doesn't care if the Colts or the Patriots won.
That really, people like that actually exist?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yes.
That's sarcasm right at him.
Well, I mean, I hear about people like that, but I never actually encounter them.
Oh,
I was totally doing it last night during the Lions-Seahawks game because I came in to the game up by, I don't know, like 15 points with Golden Tate left on my roster, and my opponent had Russell Wilson. So, like, the odds were in his favor. And so I was, you know, when the Lions were on offense, I'm like, somebody get Golden the damn ball. Somebody get it to him. Like, I did not care who wins, but Russell Wilson, I was like, please fumble that thing over and over and over again, you know?
But do you do it every game?
No. I mean, I thought I have somewhat of a life. a little bit. I just was talking to a coworker of mine who there was an event that she had to work, and someone else in the office said, well, is your husband going to come with the baby? And she said, no, it's NFL Sunday. It's fantasy. Like, he can't be coming to an event. Like, he's got to be watching his fantasy. And we started talking about it. And she said, if he goes, she goes, you know, I could tell him and beg him to come to this thing, and he would do it. He would come, but he'd be on his phone the whole time checking his fantasy scores. And I just thought that was really sad. I mean, that's even worse than me. I was on last Sunday helping out a friend of mine at this festival in Venice here in LA, and I was working in her booth for 12 hours. And, like, I'd totally forgotten about it because I was busy with other things. And I felt actually, like, a much better and healthier human being for not giving a bleep about my fantasy team.
Yeah.
It's not that important unless you have big money on it. And that's where everything changes.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Adam, what's your take on it?
I've sort of gone away from fantasy football in the last few years. I still do it with my family. My brother, the one who doesn't care about Iowa State football. Well, he's done a league for forever, like the last 15 years or so. And so, like, now his kid is in it, which is really cool. Because his kid wasn't born the first time that we had the league. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, that's something that he does every year, and we don't really try that hard at it. And that's good because I've gotten worse and worse at it over the last few years. But I mean, that's it. And I've done a couple, like, pay prize, like, not the DraftKings stuff, but the leagues that have the money buy-ins. And if you win, you get, you know, $50 or $200. And, like, that sort of puts a weird spin on it. One, I don't really like to gamble. And two, like, I don't want to be bummed out from, like, a financial standpoint if a football thing doesn't go my way. You know what I mean? Like, it's already sort of weird enough to be like, yay, go this particular player, get your yards. I don't care what the score is. But then to be like, Oh, man. Football today was horrible. All the games were exciting, and I lost $20 because of it. Like, I don't want
– But, Adam, don't you know that you are not actually gambling according to United States loophole laws?
Oh, God. Right,
yeah.
Right. There's
you're not gambling. You're just having a good old-fashioned time.
It's legally fantasy.
Yeah, it's just a fantasy, honey. Don't worry about it.
Does this compromise the integrity of the game? Because, like, seriously, all the commercials are out there, and I think they're partnered with the NFL, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, people actually get mad at players who can't get 100 yards in a game instead of their own, you know, instead of rooting for their team.
The problem,
like,
is that it leaves the door open. On the face of it, does it compromise the integrity of player X versus referee Y versus GM Z, whatever? Not necessarily, but there's a reason why the country as a whole has closed the door on sports gambling, on traditional betting on sports, pretty much outside of a casino, outside of Las Vegas, because that opens the door for corruption. And we saw it happen in the NBA more than a few years ago now. But the door is now open. I mean, I heard on TV just today, there was a link, you know, the TV show was drawing a link, just questioning between the outcome of the Lions-Seattle game versus this, quote, scandal with DraftKings and FanDuel. And that's not good. If you're already asking the question, could that bad call have been made purposely because of sports gambling, that's a problem.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just feel really weird. Like, they have more of an interest towards the players than the teams themselves. It's like, what's really the point of being a fan of a team at this point, right?
Well, for me, living in LA, I don't have a team.
Well,
so
I mean,
it's
I don't
great either, for me. But I think if you actually have a team that you're like ride or die for, then I don't know how I would feel. I don't play fantasy basketball anymore, or fantasy. I really only do fantasy football. I don't even remember what it felt like rooting for other players of teams that went against my teams when I played those sports. I don't remember if I cared or not. But I guess maybe for you guys, if you actually have NFL teams, is it weird?
It used to be weird for me when I would draft other quarterbacks. Like, oh my God, I have to draft Brett Favre, I guess. I'm a Niners fan. So it was just super weird for me. Then, of course, combined with, you know, that obnoxious friend that kept yelling out every fantasy stat in every game, I stopped. So.
Well, that's like an addiction, probably. That dude's probably an addict. Gambling. Excuse me, a fantasy addict. Not gambling.
Yeah.
Not gambling.
Like, I can never they are in like 7 or 8 leagues. Like, I can't fathom how they can do that. Seriously. That's just super, I don't know, addicted, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Final topic before we let Jackie go. We're going to talk about this screaming guy on that morning show on ESPN.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't watch the clip, but I saw all these tweets about it, basically. And the gist of it is that this dude named Stephen A. Smith, yeah, I know who he is, basically threatened Kevin Durant on television after Kevin Durant called him out on, you know, putting out a false report and calling him a liar, basically. You know, to Kevin Durant, to Stephen A's defense, like, Kevin Durant can't really say, oh, I'm thinking about going to the Lakers next year. He can't really say that anyway. But still, it's like, you know, why would you put out something erroneous like that? Like, a report about going to a team next year when, heck, I don't even know what I'm going to have for dinner.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because, and I'm not saying Stephen A's report was valid or invalid. But there are plenty of reasons to put that report out. And one of them is because when you cloak it under an anonymous source, which I have done several times as a journalist, so I'm not knocking that practice. But when you do that, do you think you're going to be held accountable? And by, of all people, the athlete himself? I mean, that was probably a big shock to see Kevin Durant just charge Stephen A, you know, go at him like a bull in a china shop and say there's no – here's the thing. I, to defend Stephen A, I mean, I can't believe I'm doing this, but let's just, I mean, it pains me to do it, but let's just say his report was correct, that somebody in the biosphere here told him that Kevin Durant was considering some other options when he becomes a free agent. First of all, Kevin, listen, I hear you, buddy. You're like, no one in my entourage, no one in my family. I am not telling this guy anything. But as someone who works for TMZ, I can tell you that there are a lot of things that celebrities don't know. There are people that are sometimes the closest to them who, for whatever reason, like being a source. They like having a journalist give mm-hmm. them a call all the time and text them and, like, listen mm-hmm. to them. So there may well be someone in Kevin's entourage that is feeding information. And it's not just friends or family. You've got mm-hmm. people who work for the agents, maybe who the agent themselves, you know, a lot of reporter sources are agents. And when you're a reporter, you have to ask yourself what the motivation is behind an agent giving you information. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a motive when it comes mm-hmm. to that. So this to me sounds something like something that maybe an agent could put out there. I have no knowledge of the situation. I'm just saying as a reporter, it's kind of what right. it sounds like to me. But so if you're Stephen A and this is a legit piece of information a source gave you, and then you have Kevin Durant call you a liar, I understand mm-hmm. being defensive and being upset about that because that sucks. But to go on national TV and threaten the guy and, like, turn into a made man and, like, put on your Vito Corleone hat, I mean, that's absurd. Get a grip, you know?
Mm-hmm. Adam, what do you think?
I have that guy muted on Twitter for a reason and like, yes. All different sort of versions of his name, because he's one of several people that I just don't want to hear about. I don't even enjoy the people who sort of, you know, the practice of hate following, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's life's too short for that. So I don't even know what what he said or
I don't know either. I didn't watch the clip either, so.
Okay. Well, my point is Jackie's right. Reporting can be sort of an ugly business sometimes, and it requires a lot of clandestine communication, and you know it can make people uncomfortable a lot of times. That's absolutely that's correct. We're talking about a guy who whose primary focus demonstrated over and over and over is to get people talking about Stephen A. Smith.
Right.
The reporting
right.
is sort of incidental at this point. And, you know, there's, and this is the sort of report that there's no way to validate until, you know, what is it? When's Durant a free agent? Is it after this season or next
summer?
Season? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, for this to come out right now, I mean, what's – one, I don't really get the point of it other than
so he can say eyeballs. I told you so in a year from now and retweet his own tweet from this year.
Who? Yeah, I don't give a damn about people who do that. Like, does anybody ever actually get extra credit for doing that?
Yeah, you do. As a journalist, now readers don't care.
Okay.
But, well, you know, but he cares. But here's the thing. It's totally ego-driven and something to think about, which I don't know if it's been talked about yet, but imagine if this was the other way around. What if Kevin Durant went on TV and threatened Stephen A. Smith and said, don't you come after me because you don't know what I can do? What if an athlete did that? I think we'd be having a very different conversation, don't you?
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, Stephen A. Smith said that he's never been wrong before.
Oh, God.
And then... you know, we all know about the Melo reports where he said he's going to leave the Knicks, and he stayed with the Knicks. So there's that.
So boom goes the dynamite.
All right. So, Adam, tell us where we can find you on the internets and all that stuff.
I'm on the Twitter.com at Adam_Jacoby.
Underscore is very important.
Very important. And I hope that the forensics teacher in Wisconsin finds some peace in his social media.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, I feel so bad for him. And then also at blackheartgoldpants.com.
Yes, sir. And Jackie?
Fancy. You can kind of find me all over the place, including at Twitter, @Jackie_Pepper.
That's also important to underscore.
Yeah, it's important because I originally had Jackie Pepper. and then for work purposes, I had to unhave it, and then when I tried to get it back again, somebody had stolen it and was retweeting my tweets from it. Oh, burn.
Oh.
Yeah, like, how sorry is your life that you have to do that? But anyway, Jackie underscore Pepper, and you can check out my podcast at the Pepper on Sports Podcast at Libsyn.com. Just put in Pepper on Sports Podcast in the Google machine, and you'll be directed there. And you can download in iTunes and subscribe, please.
Very entertaining podcast. Thank you so much for talking baseball with me, even though I don't know anything about baseball. And thanks for talking about football, which I barely know these days because I kind of skipped last year because of Roger Goodell. And thank you so much for entertaining me about reporting and about Stephen A. Smith. I will never say his name ever again. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Hey, this is Glenn Moore from Cleveland, Ohio, the host of the This Is Awesome Wrestling Show. And you're tuned in to Ray Ray is Fundamental, probably the best podcast on the West Coast, if not the whole USA.
Shake your love. I just can't shake your love.
Old school with Ray Ray and EJ with my buddy here, EJ Christian. How's it going, man?
Man, it's been a long time, Ray. I mean,
yeah.
I think literally it's been literally almost 2 months. We did a little like one of our like sessions here.
Well,
what's going on?
Let's make a special. It's actually been a month since I did a podcast, really. But let's make a special. I know you have showed your love for one of the greatest female singers in the 80s. Basically, Debbie Gibson. Debbie Gibson. You admitted your love for it when on the old Chronicles of Cry podcast when we talked about this, actually, and you're raving about her. What's up?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I want to go so far as called the greatest singer, maybe the greatest teen singer of the 80s, I guess. But I mean,
she definitely made an impact though, because like, as of today, even, I believe she's the youngest writer, producer, and singer that made it to number one.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, I'm not downplaying her success at all. In fact, you know, when you're on the say what you want about what the music is. Mm-hmm. When you're on the charts, and in that era, especially, if you're talking about the 80s, to me, I value the 80s as probably the top dogs of the. To me, I would say the 80s is probably probably the strongest like roster of artists of any decade, probably in the last like 70, 80 years. Mm-hmm. And when you're sharing the charts of Michael Jackson and Madonna and you know, bands like Bon Jovi, and then you have Debbie Gibson right in the mix of all that stuff, you have to respect it, you know.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, two things that you forget. Yeah, you just said it. She wrote her whole material. It wasn't like she's like, oh. Well, hey, I'm producer Max Fitz, whatever, and I'm going to write this for you. No, she literally wrote all the material. So that, even that would be more impressive. And I think that's where the respect for me to her comes through. And, you know, like I said, I told them I'm a little bit of a cornball, and I like some of the music.
Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of pop princes in the late 90s and early 2000s. How come no one really made a comparison to her?
So you heard comparison like Britney and anybody else?
Yeah, like I didn't hear any like, oh, she's comparable to Debbie Gibson or Tiffany. No one really said that. What's
up? Well, I think what it is too, like she didn't have the longevity that like Britney has, and And
well,
the mainstream longevity, in other words, she wasn't like on top of the charts for like at least 5-6 years straight, 10 years straight, mm-hmm. to people to really have her in their conscience. You know what I'm saying? Britney mm-hmm. Spears, for love or hate her, Britney Spears has been in our conscience for the last 16, odd years, and she's still like, you say Britney, they know Spears immediately. You know, Aguilera, yeah. Same thing too. You know, I think that's what it is. It sucks because, here's an artist like Debbie Gibson, whether you like her music or not, she's a genuine, authentic artist. Like, she actually mm-hmm. wrote and produced her own music. You know, mm-hmm. Britney can't say that. I mean, Christina Salazar can't say that. Mm-hmm. You know, Debbie Gibson can say that, though. And I think that's the sad part of the whole thing, that she doesn't get the love recognition today because of that. Now, a lot of her songs, our age or older, they appreciate it because that was their era. But mm-hmm. take on the rough, my son, as I tell him that,
So why do you think she didn't last? Is it because her music didn't mature? Because it was pretty much like the same teeny bopper sound when she was on top for 3 years.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really remember. I do remember a song that she did after that album, out of the Blue album, the big one, 887, that came out, had the Secret of Love and Only in My Dream. You know, I don't remember anything setting out really after that album, that for her to maintain success. I mean, and I think also back then too, it was so hard to stand out, man, because you have to be something. You have to stand out really heavily in that era, even in the early 90s, where there's so many great artists, in that mm-hmm. genre especially too. You had so many big artists clogging the space of MTV and all that. Yeah, it was so hard. There was a lot of good artists, but a lot of artists you hear, that you might hear about, one good album and they're done, or one good song they're done, or one good video they're done. So it was hard to, you had to really be, really had another level to go to have longevity. I think that's one thing with her. I don't think she had enough going on to maintain longevity, at least for the mainstream anyway.
Yeah, she had Electric Youth after Out of the Blue, which was also a smash hit. Lost in Your Eyes, still one of my favorite soul songs of all time, which hit number one also. But after that, it was just like she released another album, and then that was it. She was done. No more hits.
Right, and that's not a knock on her. Like I said, she can't control what her listening crowd is. She can't control that. She can only do what she does. And at the very least, she's very authentic. I think even for a teeny bopper, artist like her, and it may sound corny, she was authentic. She wrote her own music.
Mm-hmm. Is that what's missing in today's music, like cornball type of music? Because I think the only one I can think of right now at the moment would be Carly Rae Jepsen. Really. With Call Me Maybe and I Really, Really Like You or whatever else she has out there.
Well,
she's pretty cornball.
I gotta be honest, for me, it's harder for me now to pick out artists and stuff now, because I've gone even more further away from the pop music scene now in 2015 than ever before. Unless something I hear on the radio randomly that I'm not listening to, but I hear randomly, pop music to me now is so cafe. I have to you have to literally throw it in my face. You have to literally say, hey, look at this song, hey. It's hard for me now because as you get older, you gain more interest and you have a little more of a clearer mind as you get older, and you don't have time. Music today for me is just not authentic anymore. I'll have a couple of artists here and there. But all the artists mm-hmm. I listen to now today are artists I've listened to for years. The new artists come out now, I just can't get into it. Mm-hmm. I try. I still keep an eye out what's going on a little bit. Definitely nowhere close to where I was years ago. Of course you have the One Directions of the world and all those, boy bands that's trying to re-energize that whole era again, but mm-hmm. these artists today aren't authentic to me anyway. They're not authentic. They're just there just to sell a record. And to me, also, I think social media has actually hurt music too, because yes, you have more access to the artists, but the mystery and the you know, just I think sometimes less is more. And I think sometimes having all the artists in your face all the time.
Yeah.
It really hurts. I think that's what happened in the '80s and the '90s. Like you had to work hard to hear your artists. You had to buy the music. You had to go out and support. And you had to
There was a mystery to it. There was a mystery to it.
There was a suspense and mystery to, like, okay, how's this album gonna sound like? And nowadays, man, all artists want to do sell a great single, and they're happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're talking about Debbie. Your favorite? What is your favorite Debbie Gibson song?
Only My Dreams, obviously. That goes right. You know, it's kind of my top 30 or 40 songs of all time. If I ran DJ top 40 all time favorite songs, that song will be on there. That's the first whole favorite. Shake It Up is pretty good too. I think what I like about that album in general too. I think that era for me was, you know, music wise, pop culture was a great era. It was a great era. Like you're talking about late 80s. You're talking about late 80s. The styles are changing again, and, you know, and all that. And it, to me, like I thought she fit really, really perfect in 1987, 1988. She really, I think that's what was needed at that time, musically from that genre. And she did great. I thought she was great for the era. You know, I do wish that people appreciated her a little more. Because she is a really good artist. I've seen some of her stuff, you know, beyond, you know, that album. And she's not too bad. Not terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Lost in Your Eyes again. Like, one of my all-time favorite slow songs.
Yeah.
Electric Youth, as cheesy as it sounds, is actually really danceable. Foolish Beat, another great. That's the one that put her on the record books as the youngest artist to write, produce, and sing a number one song. Out of the Blue, Shake Your Love, We Could Be Together. Yeah, so I guess it shouldn't even be a question that you prefer her over Tiffany, because they were the Britney Christine of the 80s, basically.
Yeah, her and Tiffany. I mean, to me, Tiffany never got close to Debbie. To me, Tiffany was just there. Like, I think we're alone now song, but to me, she was never. To me, it was always Debbie in front. Tiffany was just a ball girl. To me, Debbie was a little more rounded than, you know, than Tiffany.
Yeah, and of course, Debbie wrote her own material, so.
Exactly. And to me, as a musician myself too, and being raised, like, to me, it's a big deal for the artist to be not only the artist or the singer, but also the creator of their material. To me, that's an extra notches of me with respect towards being the artist.
So, would Debbie succeed in today's era?
Would Debbie succeed in today?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Again, there's a lack of cornball.
I want to say yes, because I think there's, you just said it, there's a lack of authentic artists, and you'd like to think that the music she created back then, too, would actually fit well here today also. Because it was very simple, but authentic. I don't think it's that world on this podcast, but that's just to me, that's what the best word to define that. I would think she would fit as well in this era, because I think there's a lot of room for that.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah. Because, like, today is a lot of hip hop, a lot of dance music, but not straight up bubblegum pop these days.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The closest you could come to that is Taylor Swift, really, at this point.
Well,
and she's the only one, really. You know. What's Katie done these days?
You know, in a lot of ways, she's kind of like the modern day Taylor Swift in a lot of ways. Taylor Swift is kind of the same artist as she is, and she creates her own music, she writes her own stuff, and authentic. You know? And I think.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't, you know, I'll be honest with you, like, I'm not really necessarily a fan of Taylor Swift, man. But I'll tell you what, that girl is growing on me, like, really fast. Like, you hear a song, like, oh, I like this one song. And then you hear another song, like, oh, yeah, I like this song too. Like, I like that song also. You know, I'm not going to go out and buy her music. But I do respect the hell of what she's doing, though. I mean, she's really a good artist. She for that genre, she's definitely holding it down. She's probably one of the best artists of any male or female in the pop music genre right now today.
Yeah, well, she's basically the most powerful musical artist at the moment. You know, like, she's going around tours, inviting everybody on stage these days. You know? So, Yeah, but Debbie, we wish you lasted longer. We just can't shake your love, but unfortunately, you only lasted for about 2-3 years. So.
I'm not sure I'm on this era.
All right, man. Thanks so much, EJ, for sharing your love about Debbie Gibson.
Yeah.
This is Lexi Knox with WNSR Nashville Sports Radio, and you are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
Thank you so much to Jackie Pepper and EJ Christian for doing their thing in the podcast. Great talk about everything. Also, thanks to Adam Jacoby, as always, for doing the co-host duties. Much appreciated. And if you don't know by now, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show on Stitcher and RayRay.net. And this show is also being syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. You can follow the podcast Twitter on RayRay is Fun. And you can follow me personally on Twitter at TheNolaPass. That's all we got. We'll have another show next week as we are back on regular rotation. Everyone, thank you so much for your support. Gal Pal Squad, thank you so much for taking care of me. NBA, please come back very soon. And just remember, Ray Ray is fundamental, and you'll need a library card to check me out. Until the next episode, party people.
Mommy's got some things for Daddy to do.
Game over, yeah! Molded.